have projected incredible economic impact in Louisiana, and they said it's necessary in order to stay current in the industry, creating thousands of new jobs and billions of dollars in new revenue. There are those, though, on the other side of the issue that are not in favor of having the lit in St. Bernard, and Jim DeFatta, executive member of Save Our St. Bernard Group, joins us to tell their side of the story. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon, Newell, and thank you for having me on to your show today. I appreciate this opportunity to give the opposition side of the Louisiana International Terminal that is being proposed to be developed here in Violet, Louisiana, in St. Bernard Parish.
So, Jim, tell us, why don't you start and tell us about what your group's opposition is to the lit?
Well, the group as a whole, it is the will of the people. The will of the people in St. Bernard Parish are against this project because of the significant negative impacts, many of which are not able to be mitigated. And it would transform our historic St. Bernard Parish into what we perceive as an industrial wasteland. The size and the sprawl of this massive project is immense, and it takes away some of the very prime and pristine hardwood bottom swamplands that we have in our parish. And this is, you know, this parish consists of people who are multi-generational. Many generations have resided here and lived here. Of course, Katrina took most of us all away, but the people who came back chose to come back here and continue to make this their home after being devastated. So we like what we have here. We have a parish that mostly everybody knows each other here. We have a parish with natural resources that we love and enjoy, and through the multi-generations have fished and hunted and trapped and did all those wonderful things that created this community, all getting ready to be destroyed from some very large promises from the Port of New Orleans. And then the Port of New Orleans has a pretty bad track record here in St. Bernard Parish. And you know, we can go into that if you like.
Well, why don't we first talk about the negative impacts that you say cannot be remediated?
I think that's a good point. That's a good starting point. You have a construction period of 3 years, and you want to take out some 400 plus, maybe 440 acres worth of pristine swamplands. The grubbing and the demolition alone is going to require tremendous amounts of truck, heavy equipment, and those 3 years worth of just the demolition and then the construction of that immense amount of this project is going to place tremendous amounts of truck traffic on the two little inferior thoroughfares that we have that run through our parish. Now, these thoroughfares, the Louisiana DOTD, over the many years, have been trying to patchwork and piecework these little highways together. But just like the corridor over there on LA 23, when they were building that LNG plant, you can't barely ride down LA 23 anymore. It's torn up. It's in very bad shape. Well, that same thing's going to happen over here to our two little inferior roads. And not only that, Newell, it's going to create
Jim, let me stop you right there. A port terminal and an LNG plant are not even in the same sphere from a construction standpoint of what you're doing.
So you're saying that they're not building
structures at that port terminal to the extent that is done at the LNG. But So you're saying that over this 3-year period of time, I mean, what we're doing, what typically the terminal is predominantly flat work, right? Site prep, flat work, things of that nature. Are you aware of what their plan is to deal with some of these same issues that you've talked about?
Well, I don't think that they have a plan to deal with this initial impact. The only plan that would conceivably be a good plan would be to build this elevated road, this dedicated road,
right,
that they claim that they want to build, and then have all the construction traffic.
Well, when you say that they claim that they want to build, they've already got financing for the engineering of the road and to move forward in that. So it's really more than a claim. They've made it, it's a commitment that they've already procured some financing for, right? And,
okay, but
and
look,
they've now changed the law to be able to create the private-public partnership in order to do it and to move forward in trying to procure the land from landowners on outside of the levee system. Is that correct?
I believe you are correct in that. And what I would say to that is, when
so
I say
it's claim, more than a, it's more
you
than
don't
a
have
claim.
An investor.
I mean,
you don't have an investor for that project.
Well, they didn't have the law in place in order, and some other pieces legally in place in order to move forward, but they do now. So I mean,
let's get down to what really matters. What really matters is the construction period for the 3 years is going to create the gridlock in our two little east-west highways that we have with all of those construction traffic. So if you really wanted to mitigate that, you could, and that is you start the construction after you build the claimed elevated expressway. And that way you take all of that traffic off of the two little thoroughfares that we have. You know, if you don't do that, you're going to break up these two little thoroughfares, and you'll have the LADOTD over here closing up one lane and opposite lanes closing those up, doing the patchwork and piecework to repair them. And it just puts this parish in a real tremendous disadvantage from a gridlock. Look, we're approaching 49,000 people, residents, back in this parish post-Katrina. Pre-Katrina, we were 69,000. Mm-hmm. We were crying and desperate for a third east-west corridor. We cried for 40-plus years to the DOTD and the government and the state government and also the RPC. And we never did get it. And then Katrina hit. And now, you know, they want to come and bring in this expressway. But this expressway doesn't help St. Bernard Parish. It doesn't help the residents here. Yes, it will alleviate the traffic of the operations of this LIT, but only after it's constructed. Now think about it. How long will it take to construct this? This is something that the Port of New Orleans doesn't want to tell you too much about. It's pretty quiet about that. But if you look over in Golden Meadow and you look at the LA1 expressway, elevated expressway, I believe it came to 11 years. You've got to come through pristine marshlands. You've got to come through the environmental permitting. You got the construction to be completed and performed. You're years and years and years away. And that in itself is much of the crux of what destroys our parish. Who wants to live in a gridlock? You can't. You can't enjoy a parish that you called home. It wouldn't be that way for a long, long time.
Have you given them the opportunity to respond to these questions that you're asking here? Because during the course of my interviews and conversations that I've had with the principals working on LIT, a lot of the observations that you're making here, they actually bring it up, and they are working on plans to mitigate some of the issues that you're talking about. And it's not that they don't recognize
that
these... they're not saying that they don't recognize some of the challenges, right? But the fact of the matter is that they're putting the pieces and parts together at the present time, I understand that they're having meetings with local folks about this situation and how this will ultimately get done, working with the Corps. How much material can they move from the river, you know, to that area? Are there other opportunities as it relates to housing and the like of the folks that they would bring in to do a lot of the site preparation and things of that nature, understanding that they've actually looked at some of the challenges that were dealt with Venture Global and the LNG plant on the other side of the river. I don't think it's anything that they're not aware of. They're also aware of the importance of the road. I would suspect that the exigency of LA1 as opposed to the exigency of the road to the Lit are not even in the same stratosphere together, right? They intend to move at a much quicker pace in moving in the development and design of the road than what was going on with LA1, which was always going to be done in phases. So it was never that they were going to go at that job and get it completed all at one time, which is not the approach that they're taking here. This is not a phased approach as it relates to that road. So I think it's comparing apples and oranges, quite frankly.
Well, the apples and the oranges, here's what is not able to be mitigated. You want to talk about being able to move material on and off of the river. That's just pie in the sky. Because
why? We move materials on the river all the time.
Is that what we did on LA-23? And when you talk about just flat work, I beg to differ with you on that.
I didn't say just flat work, but it's the predominant part of this terminal is flat work to support containers and cranes to support the movement of the containers to trailers to move them out of that location. I mean, I spent the time to go and look at the port operations before I ever made a judgment as it related to the Lit, and to see how they coexist from that side of the wall in uptown New Orleans. And, you know, predominantly what it is a few warehouses, but a lot of flat areas. And the cranes and areas to put containers on trailers. Because the longer they're there on that dock, that's not what they desire. They desire to move it out as quickly as possible. So it's predominantly flat work. I mean, you know, the mitigation, when you talk about the hardwood wetlands, I mean, it's no different than almost anything else that was ever built in St. Bernard. And I asked this question of some of the leaders in St. Bernard. Would you favor a developer coming in and building 400 homes? Would you favor that?
I would favor anything that the people in this parish would favor, because it's the will of the people that count.
I'm asking you as a resident of St. Bernard, would you favor the development of another 400 or 500 home neighborhood in St. Bernard?
If that's what the will of the people would want, yes, I would favor that. That is correct. That's exactly what I would do.
But you don't have a position unless there's a majority of people in St. Bernard on any of these issues that support it. Personally, you don't have a position.
When you say I don't have a majority, let me ask you this.
No, I'm asking you personally. Would you support the development of a 500 new home neighborhood?
Well, I'm not sure that anybody would ever come in and do a development of that nature. So I think that's like apples and oranges, just like you were saying before. What I'd prefer to say is, if it's the will of the people, then yes, I want the.
So, Jim, what is the future? What is the future of St. Bernard then? I mean, do you think that with your existing tax base that you guys can just exist forever in the status quo today?
I don't see why we haven't. You know, Newell, this town was settled in 1780s, and I'll tell you another thing. Louisiana wasn't even a state at the time. The Louisiana Purchase was not even performed by the time when St. Bernard was developed and established. So we've been around for a very, very long period of time, and you know, if I had to put my money on it, and I'm not a betting person, I would say that our future is quite bright because it's what we want. It's what we want. It's not what others want. See, and everything that the Port of New Orleans wants to do, Sheriff, it's like this. Everything that they want to do, make all that money, create all that employment, put all those figures and facts and all that, that can all be done down in Plaquemines Parish, just the same as here.
No, it can't.
Hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayers, federal and state monies, being used to do it.
That's not true, though. It can't be because it doesn't have access to the interstate system like you do on your side of the river in St. Bernard. It doesn't have access to rail like it does on your side of the river in St. Bernard. So, no, it's not the same. Not by any stretch of the imagination.
We have a single rail that comes through St. Bernard over here. And this thing is going to be running night and day.
It's where the rail goes to. And by the way, the rail is going to be adjacent to the road as well. So, I mean, you know, so it's not the same. But, I mean, the real question here is that, you know, it's interesting that you're actually arguing for kind of almost freezing St. Bernard in its present state, status quo, and you really believe that it can continue to support itself in so doing. But what I'm saying is, well, everybody needs to grow. You need more population. Obviously, you were able to support more. And you did so with chemical plants and refineries and other industrial complexes that are located in St. Bernard now, right?
We've loved and we've been very able to coexist with the little industries that are along the Mississippi River here in St. Bernard Parish. And I think that...
But they're every bit as big as 440 acres that you're talking about with the lit, right? I mean, if I was to add up, the land of the refineries down there, it's probably that, if not more.
But the coexistence is acceptable to us, and they don't create the negative impacts. This terminal would create the 17. I mean, when you said you considered all of these impacts and it sounds to me like you're in favor of it. That's fine. I mean, you know, that's.
No, I am. I've not hidden the fact that, and I said that in my monologue this morning.
And that's why I appreciate the opportunity to show you that the people over here in St. Bernard, we don't share that same feeling, because the 1,700 trucks that they're talking about bringing in here. Can you imagine the diesel fumes from 1,700 trucks that come into an area? That's a huge negative impact. How do you mitigate that? How do you do that? You make them all electric trucks? I guess there is a way to do it. I'm not sure that they've, you know, thought of that. And is that what they're going to plan? Is that their plan? I don't know. You got unmitigatable negative impacts.
Well, I'm not sure how many trucks are brought into the port now. I know it's quite a few. I don't know that it's 1,700, but I can promise you, in talking to the neighbors that live closer to that complex than anybody in St. Bernard's actually going to live to the complex, for the most part, by numbers, you don't hear these objections, and you don't hear about obnoxious fumes or other things that you're talking about. You know, my suggestion. respectfully, is that spend more.
Lewis Terrell and Associates, and that the Port of New Orleans.
I'm not saying that the number's wrong. I'm just saying that if you visit the complex that they have now, I don't think you're going to find that, you know, the fumes or otherwise are obnoxious. But I don't know that there's 1,700 trucks visiting the complex, and they're a lot closer to neighborhoods than are going to be experienced here, in a lot more neighborhoods than what's going to be experienced here. I will have you back on, Jim, in the future as this thing starts to go through its maturation process, and we appreciate you joining us today. Jim Defada, executive member of Save Our St. Bernard Group. Have a great week. Jim?
Yes.
Hello?
You cut me
off. Yeah, I'm sorry. We've run out of time, Jim. I'm sorry. We had a half hour for this segment, and we've run out of time. That's why I said I'll have you back on.
I would love to be back on. And Sheriff, I'd like to ask you and invite you to come down here. And I know that you got to be a good friend with Jimmy Pullman. I'd invite you guys, why don't we get together and come down here and we talk, you know, and look at the real essence of what we do.
I talk to a lot of St. Bernard residents. My son lives in St. Bernard. I talk to a lot of St. Bernard residents about this project all the time. And I'm hearing from a lot of folks that are not opposed to this.
Well,
they see this as a positive.
There was 9,000 approaching 10,000 residents sign our petition opposing the SOS, opposing the LIT, and we elected.
Well, a lot of it came about, Jim, quite frankly, because people said, well, they're not going to build a road. They're going to promise us that, and they're not going to build it. There's no way, no how it's going to happen. And here it is in a very short period of time. They have all of these pieces and parts together on the road. You call it a claim. Well, it's not a claim. They've actually got deliverables already on this front. They've got the support of the governor. They've got the support of the state. They've got the support of the federal government, who have all put up money towards this initiative.
But it's not a claim.
And when you tell people out there that are not paying close attention that they claim, that has a negative connotation. So, I mean, it's not a fair characterization of exactly where these people are. And I mean, you and I can argue this point till we're blue in the face, but the fact of the matter is that there's not been, you know, an opportunity for the other side to really tell their complete story, because there's a whole lot of misinformation. I've heard it myself. I've had people tell me things. It's like, that's not true. I know it to not be true. So we'll continue this conversation. I apologize. I have to move on. Jim Defada, executive member of the Save Our St. Bernard Group. We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back, folks. Just over a week ago, New Orleans officials began dispersing homeless residents sleeping or camping in the French Quarter. And we were kind of curious as to how this is working relative to the pipeline of services for the homeless that have been developed in the city of New Orleans. And as such, Ed Carlson, CEO of Odyssey House Louisiana and director of the New Orleans Low Barrier Shelter and Engagement Center, also known as the Low Barrier Shelter on Gravier Street, joins us to talk about this. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Noel. I really appreciate being here.
So, Ed, give us the state of the state.
Let me just tell you a little bit more about Odyssey House. We're the largest addiction treatment provider in the state of Louisiana. We treat over 24,000 people a year. We have over 500 beds that we provide services to throughout South Louisiana. We do everything from medically supported detox. We do short-term inpatient treatment. We have a long-term treatment program. We do housing, sober living housing. We also do a lot of prevention and work out into the community, overdose prevention, and we do a lot of work in homeless services. We're a nonprofit agency. We've been around for 52 years, and we specialize in the poor and the disenfranchised. And the homeless population is very much within the preview of people that we work with. Last June, it's been just a little over a year, we took over the Low Barrier Shelter. The city was having some difficulties with the operational piece, and so We employed a lot of best practices of shelter practice and how to provide services in the shelter and how to combine a whole host of services. And so with that process, we've been able to move a lot of people out of the shelter, deal with all the criminal activity that had been happening in the shelter, and really focus on helping people get the services that they need in the low-barrier shelter.
So
that's sort of the state of where we kind of are. I know that the city has been doing multiple sweeps. I know that they started working with the state and doing some sweeps. And we're very much involved in that, providing services to people and having beds available for them to be able to put people into.
So have you seen increased numbers moving through this pipeline of services?
Well, we've been really good at moving people out of the shelter. So we've been able to create a capacity to move people into the shelter. So that way people aren't languishing in the shelter. We've been able to do everything from helping people get employment, having job fairs at the shelter, helping them move out on their own, finding places to live on their own, getting jobs, as well as those people who are chronically and persistently mentally ill, helping them get the services, or people with disabilities who would qualify for permanent supportive housing, get them into housing. And then the people that we work with who we identify as having addiction issues, we're able to help move them into addiction treatment services.
So you, in the services that you're providing, just for the benefit of the listening audience, do you welcome or are you ambivalent? Or are you opposed to these proactive kind of roundups of, you know, folks in the French Quarter and other areas of the city with that going on?
Well, you know, I kind of see both sides of the process. But for me, letting somebody languish on the streets who have an addiction issue or also who have a mental illness isn't benefiting them or anybody in society. So kind of getting them off the street, getting them into the shelter so we can figure out what's going on with them is really kind of our first step to helping to solve the problems that they need to solve with the people. And I'm a big believer in when somebody has sort of moved their lives and made their lives in such a way, regardless of whether it was their choice or if they were born with a mental illness or whatever it is, if somebody eventually has to kind of step in and say, hey, we got to stop the madness for this person. This person just can't languish on the street. They just can't sit around and use drugs all day. We have to somehow stop and help move people into treatment and services. And that's what we try to do very hard at Odyssey House and the work that we do at the Low Barrier Shelter.
And what is, you know, I think a lot of folks are curious. I think people agree with you with how you just outlined this totally, myself included. What has been the success rate of moving folks to permanent housing?
So, the key to having good success in permanent housing is making sure that somebody is heavily case managed and that they have access and that they're getting the services that they need. So if you're chronically and persistently mentally ill and you need a certain amount of medication, you have to make sure that somebody is working with you and following up with you. Because if not, if somebody is or somebody's active in their addiction and they're using, those people wind up back on the street almost as fast as you get them off the street because no landlord is going to put up with that and no housing units are going to put up with any of that kind of behavior that's involved with that. So you have to make sure that the people are getting the services and they're getting the services at the level that they need and that there's constant follow-up with them about that. And that's part of a key success to permanent supportive housing.
Well, it makes perfect sense, right? I mean, first off, beating addictions is not easy by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
It's a very difficult process. And, you know, I love to hear the success stories because, you know, having worked with that population for so many years, I mean, we actually funded social detox facilities in Jefferson Parish when I was the sheriff because we recognized there was a shortage of those services, and without them, we weren't going to get anywhere. You know, I mean, it's something that needed to happen. I was just kind of curious, you know, because you hear all the anecdotal stories, you know, people don't want permanent housing. But a lot of the, you know, sectors of the population, they don't really know what they want because they're so drugged out or they're so mentally incapacitated. They don't really have a sense of reality, do they?
Well, the truth of the matter is they don't. I mean, if you're caught within your mental within a mental illness, for example, and you're not taking your medications and you're wandering around the streets, confused and dazed, unable to focus yourself and your attention, you know, that person's going to need a whole lot of help and stabilization to get them before you can even consider putting them into housing, right? Same way with somebody who's actively involved in their addiction. They're not going to be able to stay into housing because of all the problems that come with addiction. You know, putting somebody into housing, if they're actively using, so many times I've seen it happen where, you know, it becomes a drug den, you know, and there's a lot of other drug activity and there's people in there and they're tearing apart the unit and the landlord will never rent to somebody with a voucher again because of the damage that's done with it. So getting people into treatment and services and help getting their heads clear and help getting them stabilized so you can figure what's the appropriate level of care. Now, somebody with a chronic mental illness might need more of a group home setting. They may not be able to be put into an apartment. But you're not going to know that until you get a good period of time of stability with them and get them on their medication and get them in a good place. I've seen some amazing success stories with people who had mental illnesses, addiction, or both, and getting the right medication, the right services, were able to actually become productive members of society and really begin to contribute back to society and work and have their house and have a place to live and, you know, being able to sort of create that for themselves. Now, it doesn't always end that way, but for a lot of people, if you can sort of get them clean and stabilized, you can kind of figure out what are the things that are going on with them, and then with a good case management team, focus on getting them to be able to move forward in their lives and not spending their lives on the street. I don't think anybody really, at least all the people, and I've been working in this field for over 40 years in the addiction field, and so I've never really met anybody that when they were in the midst of their addiction that they, and especially when all the problems that were associated, that they were happy about that, but they felt there was no way out. And what we try to do is give them a path forward and show them how they can be able to get sobriety, get sober, maintain their sobriety, and become productive members of society.
Ed, you must have started when you were you must have started when you were 12.
No, I'm 63. I started in my early 20s. I've been working in this field for a long time. You know, I really enjoy it. I love the work. I have a great passion for it. Really enjoy the work that I do at Odyssey House.
Let me ask the governor recently granted you guys $380,000 to fund permanent housing for shelter residents. When we think long term, are we going to be able to sustain this? I mean, you know, because, you know, you've been around a long time. You see these programs come and go, right? You see the funding come and go. And when things get tight, mental health is one of the first that mental health services. It always boggles my mind. No pun intended, but why that would, would be the first thing to cut, because it's one of the most critical. Do we have the oomph to continue this?
Well, I think that I spend a lot of time. I do a lot of advocacy work, both local, state, nationally, and internationally. And I see that a lot of people are very interested in trying to understand, because I think people get frustrated because they feel like they put a lot of money towards things and they don't see any outcomes. So, for example, Odyssey House, we have a whole department that focuses on compliance, quality, and outcomes and outcome measurements. And if something's not working, we don't want to continue to do something or waste taxpayer money by continuing to do the same thing over and over again just because we've done it this way for 5, 10, 20 years. We want to make sure that we're constantly providing the highest quality services with the best outcome using data and information and learning, constantly learning about what are the things that are happening around the United States or around the world around best ways and best practices of treating addiction and or people with mental illness or people who have both. And so we're a little unique in that we do this very integrated approach where we provide primary care because we have two federally qualified health centers. We do mental health, and then we do substance abuse treatment services, all in this integrated fashion. And we have found that the combination of these provides better outcome data across the board, and that we're able to get better bang for our buck for the money that is being spent. And so we really try to focus on making sure that we have the services available and a full continuum of care that will make sure that we target and get people the right level of services that they need so they can focus on moving forward to become productive members of society.
Return on our investment, it's music to my ears. Ed, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I got to get to a break. But if folks want to get involved with your organization or donate money, where would they go?
They could go to our website is the easiest way to do it. We are in a constant growth mode, but we're always looking for possible donations. Because of client confidentiality, we can't really take a lot of volunteers. But we're also always looking for board members and people who want to help to work with us in the services we provide.
And the website is what now?
It's www.ohlinc.org.
All right. www.ohlinc.org. Ed Carlson, CEO of Odyssey House, Louisiana, and the director of the New Orleans Low Barrier Shelter and Engagement Center. Thank you so much for joining us. Keep up the great work, Ed, and have a great week.
Thank you, sir. Take care. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot or Ian. Ian Hoax in for Scoot. Sorry about that. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. A lot of response on the text line about our conversation with Jim Defada, executive member of SOS, Save Our St. Bernard Group. They're talking about him grasping at straws. There's already a bulk terminal there, associated terminal. There's also a good percentage of people that reside in St. Bernard that work in the maritime industry, and there's an ISO tank facility that contains hazardous chemicals there. The guy is grasping at straws to justify his NIMBY attitude. Not everyone in St. Bernard believes like that, another texter says, and folks are saying allow progress to take place. One texter says, I have three properties in St. Bernard. It's a good thing. Jobs are needed. Newell, you do not live in St. Bernard. I guarantee that at least 75% of the residents are against the LIT project for multiple reasons. Would you like this in your backyard? I wouldn't mind it, quite frankly. I've done my homework on the issue. Let's see, these are about other topics. So Ian Hoak is in for Scoot. What do we have coming up, Ian? Oh, well, Ian stepped out for a second. So we will be, Ian will be right back in. He's in for Scoot today. So hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you guys again in the morning.